Hello, I'm Jeff Stelling. Welcome to Football's Greatest. This week, we're sitting down with a legend of the game who is going to tell us about his five toughest ever opponents. Joining me is Matt Letizier.
Jim, I said, it's three times Stuart's done me already today.
And he just looked at me and he went, not today, son, not today. The ball could be 50 yards away and Martin would be right up behind me, pinching me, deliberately standing on my toes with his studs. And it just became a bum fight whenever he played against the other. He had their mad eyes, that like the red mist comes down, you know, a bit like Franny Benali had. And he had that and was like, didn't want to get too close to him.
We are going back to the days, Matt, when as a midfield player, very different to these days, I think, you must have got lumps kicked out of you.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot more had to be done for a yellow card to be issued back in the day when I started. I mean, I remember my second ever game for Southampton, and I took my place on the right wing, and I took a look down the left hand side of the opposition's defence, and there was Stuart Pearce, and I was like, wow! I just saw these thighs on a bloke. It was just like, I've never seen thighs that big on a bloke before. And then for the next 45 minutes, he decided to kick the crap out of me, basically. I was only a 17-year-old kid. I was about 10 and a half stone dripping wet at the time. And I was thinking, whoa, this professional football is quite tough. And I don't think he even got a yellow card for it.
Yeah. How do you think you'd have done then in these sort of less physical times?
I think it would have been a lot easier to play. I mean, there certainly wouldn't have been levels of fear and intimidation that there were, you know, knowing that players can't tackle you from behind, they're going to get carded straight away if it happens. So, you know, it would have been a lot easier to play as a ball player in this day and age. They don't know their ball. And also, you know, we talk about it being a lot easier in terms of the tackling and stuff. But what a lot of people don't talk about is how much easier it is to dribble on pitches that are like carpets. You know, we didn't have that.
Not like that?
The Dell wasn't really a carpet, yeah. No. I mean, the only carpets really back in our day were probably Highbury and Anfield sometimes. The rest of the pitches were, come kind of October, November, they'd started to cut up and it was not easy to dribble on those kind of pitches, certainly not in the winter.
If we're looking at the modern game then, if you were playing now, is there anybody you wouldn't fancy playing against? Anybody who's a bit of a throwback, if you like, to your era?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. I think most of the defenders are kind of more cultured these days and they want to, you know, play out from the back and all that kind of stuff. I think I'd actually really enjoyed playing today because the defenders now, they give you a chance. They give you a chance in really dangerous areas of the pitch, which never used to happen. You know, it was always safety first and a lot of the players. I mean, you can maybe say Lewis Dunk, perhaps, a little bit more old school. But there isn't really those kind of players that had those kind of intimidation, you know, the Roy Keanes, the Patrick Vieiras, the Jimmy Cases, who was my teammate, who I saw intimidate many a player. You know, Vinnie Jones tried it. So, yeah, I don't think there's too many players in the Premier League now who would intimidate their opposition just by their sheer presence.
Vinnie Jones tried it. How?
I say Vinnie Jones tried. I didn't really see Vinnie Jones as the hard man that everyone else kind of did, to be honest. I played against Vinny when he was playing against Jimmy Case, and honestly it was so funny to watch. Vinny would just go nowhere near Jimmy, you know. It was almost like he had this respect thing for Jimmy going on, and Vinny was completely intimidated by Jimmy Case. So because I saw that, I didn't really feel intimidated by Vinny Jones at all.
So it's one thing getting a grip on Paul Gascoigne, but another thing with Jimmy Case.
Absolutely. Know your opponent.
Am I right in thinking your debut was against Spurs?
It was. My full debut was against
Spurs. Remember who was in that Spurs team?
Graham Roberts was in that, would have been in that Spurs team.
Reza Ruddock was in that Spurs team.
Was he indeed?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Wow. So, Glenn Hoddle was in that team as well, actually.
Okay. Well, Glenn wouldn't kick you, but the other two might have done.
Absolutely. Would have. And also, I remember playing a couple of years after that against Spurs when they had, I was still playing on the right wing, and they had Pat Vandenhoutt playing.
Oh, right.
Back.
Oh, he was a monster, wasn't he?
Oh, he had their mad eyes, that like the red mist comes down, you know, a bit like Franny Benali had. And he had that. It was like, didn't want to get too close to him.
The strange thing is, isn't it? Because you brought Franny in there. Now, the strange thing is, like, Franny, off the pitch, is the nicest man in the world. David Prutton, who we used to work with, off the pitch, nicest man in the world. Yep. On the pitch, you know, turns into an absolute monster.
I found, actually, that there was quite a common theme with all those kind of guys. You know, I mentioned playing against Stuart Pearce early on in my career. And for a few years, he did frighten me. I was scared of him. I don't mind admitting it. And then I got in the England squad and spent some time with him. And I ended up playing in the card schools with him at England. And I thought, he's a really nice bloke. And strangely enough, after that, I didn't mind playing against him because I knew he was actually quite a nice bloke. And actually, that's just a bit of a front.
You thought he probably wasn't going to hurt you too much.
He kind of, later on in my, and I kind of got a little bit, I bulked up a little bit and I was a bit stronger. So I didn't mind having a bit of a physical battle then.
We might come round to Stuart Pearce. He might figure in your top five. Who've got number five?
I think Stuart was my number five.
Oh, right. Okay.
I think Stuart, I'm not sure I put them in any particular order, but he was kind of, I did it in a, so I would say Stuart because that was my first one really I came across that was, ooh, that frightened me a little bit.
You see, you had some tough guys in your team at the time as well, didn't we? Mention Franny, you had Jimmy Case there.
Well, that game, in that first half, when Jimmy was brilliant in our team because he was like our minder because we had quite a young forward line in those days. And so he would like kind of protect us from the other opposition. Normally, if somebody like give you a bit of a smack, he'd just take a note of their number and a couple of minutes later, you'd see him smash him off the ball somewhere. And you could get away with it in those days because there was only one camera at the ground, so he could do whatever he wanted. But that particular game, I remember just jogging inside to him where he was playing centre mid and just going, I said, Jim, I said, it's three times Stuart's done me already today. And he just looked at me and he went, not today, son, not today. I thought, yeah, that Stuart Pearce is quite hard, isn't he?
Well, anybody who's got the nickname of Psycho,
yeah,
you're not going to look forward to playing against, are you?
No, absolutely. And we had actually a guy when I first got into the Sound team, similar, same nickname, was a guy called Mark Dennis, who I'm sure you'll remember very well, who I was very pleased I was on the same side as him. However, I did a couple of seasons later, he left and went to join QPR, and I played against him at QPR, and that was a little bit scary as well. He had the longest metal studs in his boots of any player I've ever seen.
Oh, Stuart Pearce says in his biography, he says, when he crossed the white line, he was always in control. Did it strike you that way?
I'd probably disagree with that on some occasions. Although, in fairness to him, Stuart was always very, I say fair, he would always try to take the ball as well as the man. do you know what I mean? He was very good at it. He didn't really kind of, he wasn't a like a sneaky off the ball type defender, who I'll come to in a minute with one of the other players that I mentioned in my list. He was kind of in your face and he was hard and he was tough and he would go through you, but he would go for the ball as well. But he would think nothing of taking you out at the same time. I mean, a lot of the tackles that Stuart made back in the day, nowadays, when you see people getting off for winning the ball and then following through and getting the player, Stuart would have had quite a lot of red cards, I would say, for that kind of thing. He was very good at getting both.
Did you actually have a sort of grudging admiration for him in a sense? Because he'd come from a non-league background.
Absolutely.
Went on to captain his club, captain his country as well.
Absolutely, I did. You know, because, you know, he wasn't just a hard bloke. He also was very good as an attacking fullback. You know, there was some seasons he was scoring, you know, a phenomenal amount of goals. He had this thing where he would just drive forward and he'd knock the ball to Nigel Clough and he would just carry on running. And Nigel Clough had the vision to be able to get the ball back to him. And they had a cracking partnership there. So, yeah, I had a lot of admiration for Stuart as a footballer. Definitely.
Of course, you had something else in common with Stuart Pearce because, like you, he didn't go to the 1998 World Cup under Glenn Hoddle.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. And what I did have huge admiration for him for was the penalty against Spain in the Euros in 96 when, you know, he'd had the heartbreak of what happened in 1990. And I think the reaction when he scored that goal is just something that is imprinted in most English football fans' minds.
Well, the entire nation reacted the same way.
Exactly right. We did in front of the telly. And so, yeah, a huge, huge respect for Stuart as a man as well. And again, you know, the last few years I've seen him a fair bit around. One of the nicest blokes you could meet.
I hope you're enjoying the show. We can't do it without you. If you're listening to us on your favourite podcast platform, please press follow to make sure we're in your feed every week. Okay, so Stuart Pearce we've got at number five. What about number four?
I'm going to go with Paul McGrath at number four, because although Paul was a strong centre-back and could put his foot in, he was one of the best readers of the game I think I played against. He was really, really difficult to get the better of. Found it quite tough to get around him. He always seemed to be in the right place. And it was just amazing, because all the stories that you hear about Paul, you know, because of his knees, couldn't train. For him to be able to play at the level that he did for so many years, but without actually having to train in between the matches, was just...
Well, you know how that feels.
Wow. Yeah, I did turn up for training. But it was just incredible. You know, I thought these stories were kind of folklore, you know, myths made up about this guy. But then I spoke to the guys that played with him at Aston Villa, and they were just like, no, he just didn't train. Couldn't train. His knees were knackered. But the levels that he performed to on a Saturday were just incredible. So I was really... I had one moment against him where I kind of got the better of him, because he was such a good player. It's one that stands out at Villa Park at the whole end. I got the ball in the box and I went to shoot with my left foot, and I could see him coming to block me. So as he went to block me, I just chopped it back and sent him for a pie and rolled it in the corner at the whole end. And so when you get the better of somebody that good, it kind of sticks in your mind a little bit. So
you scored a few goals against Villa, in fairness, during his time. So
I did, but that was the only time really that I had to get past him to go and do it, really. But yeah, Villa, there was three teams actually in my career where I got into double figures against in my career. So Villa was one of them, Nottingham Forest was the other one, and Spurs, ironically, which was my team as a boy.
It's interesting, isn't it, that obviously we joke about, you know, that you didn't like training and so on and so forth, and Paul McGrath couldn't train. So in some respects, he must have been like you had to have a manager who understood that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely he did. Yeah. I think there would probably be a lot of managers who would have dismissed him and just gone, sorry, you can't train. You know, I can't possibly do that to you. But his ability was just so out the norm that he had managers who were prepared to put up with that and stick him in the team, even at international level. Mm. It was just amazing.
Yeah, what a player he was. Yeah. Stuart Pearson, Paul McGrath, that's a pretty good start, isn't it? Who's next, Tess?
So I'm going to go for Gary Pallister next.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
People might be surprised. I would be surprised by that, because, you know, you're thinking of toughest opponents. And, of course, Pallister and Bruce were, 7 years together at Manchester United. And I thought you would have said Steve Bruce, you know, wipe you out.
Yeah, but for me, I actually felt like I had more of a chance against Steve Bruce than I did against Pally. Pally, he was one of those players who just, you thought you'd got past him, and that long leg would just come out from nowhere and he'd slide it round the side of you. He's just like, how the hell has he got to that? And he was just really frustrating to play against. And again, somebody I got to know at England, in the England squads, and again, another brilliant bloke. But he was a centre-back who could play, but also one that I just struggled to get the better of. And it was just those long limbs. Every time you thought you just had half a yard on him, he'd just stick his leg out from somewhere and think, how the hell have you got to that? And he was pretty frustrating to play against. So, yeah, I did struggle against Pallister.
And they complimented each other so much, brilliant, didn't they? Bruce and Pallister, what a match.
Brilliant partnership, and the success they had at that club while those two were there was just phenomenal. I mean, you talk about players and, you know, England caps and things like that, and, you know, a lot of people, when you come to talk about players who never got an England cap and should have had one, Steve Bruce is in that conversation quite a lot. Yeah, superb partnership.
Of course, Gary Pallister played in that infamous 6-3 Manchester United defeat at Southampton. Well, I say he played in it. He played half in it because he was taken off at half-time. Mm. I'm sure it's one of the games that must stick in your memory because you scored a fantastic goal apart from anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that day was just... I mean, it's what people don't realise about that day, it doesn't get spoken about much about the day, is that Roy Keane got sent off in that game quite early. So I think it was about
20 minutes.
About 20 minutes. So we had 70 minutes to play against them, and they still scored three times against us. So that's how good they were. But yeah, that game was brilliant. We had Ile Berkovic in top form that day, Egil Ostenstad, who controversially had his hat-trick taken off of him.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the last goal went down as an own goal. Phil Neville, own goal. Yeah. So I think he still got the match ball, though. He took the match ball on the day before they took the goal off of him. But yeah, that was just one of those days where, you know, the whole team played to their potential.
Yeah. I think it's generally thought of, isn't it, as possibly the most embarrassing Manchester United defeat of the whole of that decade of the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it came on the back of that 5-0 defeat at St James's Park. So they conceded 11 goals in the space of, you know, 5 or 6 days, which I don't think has probably ever happened in Man United's history before. So, yeah, that was a pretty special day, that one.
Yeah, and I would imagine that Pally was pleased to be off at half-time. I see him quite a lot now. He looks like he could still play an actual... But I didn't realise that he was taken off at half time in that game. So the next time I see him, I'll definitely be asking him about it. NordVPN is the greatest service for secure access to the internet. It can protect your private data, like bank details, passwords, and online identity. It even does so when you're travelling or using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world, including when you're following your favourite team abroad. Just one NordVPN account can be used on up to 6 devices, and that's for the price of a cup of coffee a month. To grab our huge discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/fgpod. This code will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the episode description box. So who's next, Tiss? You've got 2 to come.
So number 2, I'm going to go for Martin Keown. He was probably the most annoying defender that I played against. You know, you talk about players that were... Stuart Pearce would be fair, would go through you with the ball, but, you know, wasn't one of those where it was off the ball. Martin was horrible. Off the ball. The ball could be 50 yards away and Martin would be right up behind me, pinching me, deliberately standing on my toes with his studs. And it just became a bun fight whenever he played against the other, because George Graham had this habit of putting a man marker on me whenever his teams played against me. So Martin was one of those. I think he did it with... When he was at Leeds, I think he did with Chris Fairclough, I think. But Martin was just... They called him the Rash for a reason. Yeah. And he was told to man-mark me. And honestly, he literally would follow me, not be within a yard or two of me the whole match.
Did you talk to him during the course of a game?
Not really.
Did you with any
not,
of these
not
guys?
Not in terms of conversation. Yeah. Sometimes you'd have conversation with people. Martin wasn't one of those blokes you could have a conversation with. I mean, if I spoke to him, it was just to abuse him, really, because he was being an idiot. And honestly, when we played against each other, both of us used to end up getting yellow cards because we'd just be fighting each other off when the ball was like 40 yards away and he's still elbowing me. Idiot. So I think, yeah, from that point of view, he was the most annoying defender. He's probably very proud of that fact, knowing Martin, because he did like to get under people's skins. And so, yeah, I didn't enjoy playing against Martin. And
well, you did once.
He'll love that.
You did once, because it was the last game at the Dell.
Well, yes.
And Martin Keown was in that Arsenal team.
He was indeed, but I'd only come on as a sub for like 12 minutes, so I didn't have to endure him for too long. And he wasn't man-to-man marking me. They probably thought I was that fat at that point. They didn't need to man-to-man mark me.
Well, when you scored that winning goal, 89 minutes, you must have been tempted to go and say something to him.
You know, I didn't. It didn't even cross my mind, to be honest with you. At that point, that was just such an amazing moment that the opposition didn't matter for me. There, I'd completely forgotten about Martin. I did score at Highbury in a game. I think we ended up losing 4-2, but I scored and kind of got the better of him a little bit. I kind of got on his blind side a little bit, and he kind of switched off for just a second, and I managed to nip in front of him, take a touch, and smash it past David Seaman at Highbury. So, but they were few and far between the moments when I kind of got the better of Martin when he was marking me.
6 red cards in the Premier League for Martin Keogh, and so it wasn't just you that he was all over, was it? But he's because he played with Tony Adams a lot of the time as well. Was Martin Keogh more intimidating than Tony Adams then?
He was, actually, in terms of kind of being a little bit scared, because I knew that Martin was, you know, would think nothing of, you know, snapping you. He had those weird eyes that Pat Vandenau had. He had the same ones. You could see it in his eyes.
He's still got them.
He's still got them. Yeah, still got them. So yeah, Tony was cracking. Don't get me wrong. Tony was a cracking defender, and again, somebody I kind of got to know at England as well, and liked Tony. So Tony wasn't quite as intimidating. He was hard. But he was kind of more in the Stuart Pearce mould as opposed to the Martin Keown mould.
Well, a number of years ago, I met Martin Keown in an airport abroad, and we were both just returning from holiday, and we got chatting about punditry, and I think he was just getting involved at the time, and he said the problem with some of today's pundits is they are too intense. He said, staring me down, and it was, you know, I can't think of anybody who was more intense as a player or as a pundit than Martin Keown.
Well, it's nice to know that the shoe is on the other foot for a change, Martin.
Yeah, but in fairness to him, we talked about, you know, what people are like on the pitch and off the pitch. Again, I find him an incredibly likeable, approachable guy off the pitch, as compared to on it.
Yeah, yeah. And most of the players, I mean, I don't really kind of, I mean, I spent 17 years in the change room at Southampton. I could count on one hand the amount of people I didn't really get on with. Most of the lads are good lads. Good lads.
I do hope you're enjoying the show. I just want to tell you that you can follow us at Football's Greatest Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And search for Football's Greatest Pod to find us on X. So we've had your 5-4-3-2. What about number one? Who was your toughest opponent?
My toughest opponent, and again, not a dirty opponent, but somebody I found very difficult to get the better of, and because you will never beat Des Walker. Des, for me, was a Rolls-Royce of a defender. Just read the game really well, but his pace, he covered the ground so quickly. Even if you kind of managed to get past him, he was back at you in the blink of an eye, and you know, a lot of the time, I mean, I wasn't particularly quick, as you know. I have a little bit of pace, but normally, if I got the better of a defender, I could get away from him, but I just found that Des was just always there. He just couldn't shake him off. I remember one time he was playing for Sheffield Wednesday, and I was playing up front for Southampton that day, and Sheffield Wednesday had a corner. And it was literally just me and Des left up the field. So Des was like on the halfway line. I was just kind of like a few yards in front of him. And so they took the corner and we cleared it, and they cleared the ball, and it's come straight to my foot. I've controlled it brilliantly. I've turned, and it's me against Des Walker, one-on-one. Like, I've got 50 yards behind him. And I remember getting the ball, and he came to engage me, and I knocked the ball past him. And he just turned around and literally, honestly, he didn't even get out of second gear, and he got to the ball. And I just remember us being in the middle of the pitch at Hillsborough, and I just started laughing. And he started laughing because we both knew, what was I thinking of? I've knocked the ball past Des Walker thinking that I can get to the other side of it. And we both of us just started laughing in the middle of the pitch at Hillsborough. And I just looked at him and went, what was I thinking? And he went, I know. Well, I loved Des. He was a brilliant guy as well. Again, you know, one of those blokes you just kind of, I didn't really got a bad word to say against him. He's really, really top bloke. He loved his golf as well. And still yeah, still a really good laugh, great lad.
I can't remember Des during his playing. I can't remember him kicking people very much. Was that because of his pace?
But he didn't have to. That's exactly right. That for me, if you're a defender that doesn't need to do that, and also what he didn't have to do, he never had to make last-ditch tackles. He never put himself in those positions where he had to kind of do a slide tackle at the end. I mean, he used to come off at the end of the game. His shorts weren't even dirty. And he would just put himself in all the right places and make it really difficult for you to beat him. So he was, spoke earlier on about sometimes putting myself in positions on the pitch where I didn't want to come up against other players. And when I played against Nottingham Forest, I tried to be in the areas of the pitch where Des wasn't, just so that I could have a decent chance.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Nottingham Forest and Sheffield Wednesday, but he went to Sampdoria.
Yeah,
as well. You think with all of his attributes, are you surprised that he wasn't a success there?
Yeah, I mean, I think in Italy in that time, though, I don't think they were kind of having those kind of defenders. They wanted the Martin Keown type of defenders in Italy at that point, not the Des Walkers. And I think that was probably why it maybe didn't go quite as well for him as you might have expected.
Mm. Big player for England, though, over the years as well, wasn't
really
he?
Really good player for England. Yeah, really good. I mean, I thought there were times, actually, when he got left out of the England team where he was, you know, should have been in it. I think he should have actually, he was one of those players that should have won more caps than he got.
Yeah, I was interested to read that he was a kid at Spurs.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was. And he was basically kicked out of the club because it had an argument with Bill Nicholson
over
not getting his hair cut. And now, that surprised me because just having seen him from afar, because I don't know Des at all, having seen him from afar, he always strikes me as a very mild-mannered man, you know? So if that is true, then that surprised me a little.
And
you could have played with him at the same Spurs side.
I didn't that's true, yeah. I didn't realise Des was that old to have known Bill Nicholson.
Well, I think so. Anyway, that was what the story was. He was just a young boy at the time, so it was only before.
Wow, yeah, that does surprise me. I didn't realise he was at Spurs.
Yeah, well, as I say, it was just as a kid.
Yeah,
you know, he had to go and find his way with other clubs. Interesting thing. How many goals did you score in your career?
209.
How many Des scored?
Ooh. I don't remember Des really scoring very much.
Yeah, you're quite right. Not to remember him scoring very much.
One?
One is the correct answer.
Was it really?
He scored one goal, and it was against Luton on New Year's Day in 1992.
Wow.
One goal.
Yeah. How many games was that in? That must have been like 400 games or something.
More. It's over 700 games. He played over 700 games professionally. Yeah, and he scored one goal. But I guess that when you're a defender like him with his pace, when you're attacking, you've got set plays and so on and so forth, he'd be the man you'd leave back, wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't remember him really coming up for too many set pieces and things. And that wasn't his forte. He knew what his strengths were.
Brilliant. Tis, thanks once again for joining us and sharing with us your five toughest opponents. And thanks to you for joining us as well. Don't forget to check out our other episode with Matt Letizia, where he talks about football's greatest ever set-piece takers. Next time on Football's Greatest, Chelsea double winner Michael Ballack discusses the greatest Bundesliga players. Do you see any similarities between Jude Bellingham's game and the way you used to play the game?
A little bit. I thought I was scoring a lot of goals, but if you see his how many goals he scores now, and also the way he scores goals, is creating, it's not just enter the box or joining the box and finish a cross. He's also creating himself.
Remember to subscribe to the show on YouTube and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for joining us. Football's Greatest is a Folding Pocket production with BBC Studios.